He was looking at Jace, and Clary thought that he must be one of the few people in the world who looked at Jace not as if he were afraid of him, but as if he were afraid for him. Valentine is dangerous. I know you're a good shadow hunter. You're probably the best our age. But Valentine's one of the best there ever was. It took a huge battle to bring him down. And he didn't exactly stay down, said Isabel, examining her forked tines. Apparently. But we're here, said Jace. We're here, and because of the Accords, nobody else is. If we don't do something... We're going to do something, said Hodge. I'll send the Clave a message tonight. They could have a force of Nephilim here by tomorrow if they wanted. They'll take care of this. You have done more than enough. Jace subsided, but his eyes were still glittering. I don't like it. You don't have to like it, said Alec. You just have to shut up and not do anything stupid. But what about my mother? Clary demanded. She can't wait for some representative from the Clave to show up. Valentine has her right now. Pangborn and Blackwell said so, and he could be... She couldn't bring herself to say the word torture, but Clary knew she wasn't the only one thinking it. Suddenly, no one at the table could meet her eyes, except Simon. Hurting her, he said, finishing her sentence. Except Clary. They also said she was unconscious and that Valentine wasn't happy about it. He seems to be waiting for her to wake up. I'd stay unconscious if I were her, Isabel muttered. But that could be any time, said Clary, ignoring Isabel. I thought the Clave was pledged to protect people. Shouldn't there be shadow hunters here right now? Shouldn't they already be searching for her? That would be easier, snapped Alec, if we had the slightest idea where to look. But we do, said Jace. You do? Clary looked at him, startled and eager. Where? Here. Jace leaned forward and touched his fingers to the side of her temple, so gently that a flush crept up her face. Everything we need to know is locked up in your head under those pretty red curls. Clary reached up to touch her hair protectively. I don't think... So what are you going to do? Simon asked sharply. Cut her head open to get at it? Jace's eyes sparkled, but he said calmly, Not at all. The Silent Brothers can help her retrieve her memories. You hate the Silent Brothers, protested Isabel. I don't hate them, said Jace candidly. I'm afraid of them. It's not the same thing. I thought you said they were librarians, said Clary. They are librarians. Simon whistled. Those must be some killer late fees. The Silent Brothers are archivists, but that is not all they are, interrupted Hodge, sounding as if he were running out of patience. In order to strengthen their minds, they have chosen to take upon themselves some of the most powerful runes ever created. The power of these runes is so great that the use of them... He broke off, and Clary heard Alec's voice in her head saying, They mutilate themselves. Well, it warps and twists their physical forms. They are not warriors in the sense that other shadow hunters are warriors. Their powers are of the mind, not the body. They can read minds, Clary said in a small voice. Among other things, they are among the most feared of all demon hunters. I don't know, said Simon. It doesn't sound so bad to me. I'd rather have someone mess around inside my head than chop it off. Then you're a bigger idiot than you look, said Jace, regarding him with scorn. Jace is right, said Isabel, ignoring Simon. The Silent Brothers are really creepy. Hodge's hand was clenched on the table. They are very powerful, he said. They walk in darkness and do not speak, but they can crack open a man's mind the way you might crack open a walnut, and leave him screaming alone in the dark if that is what they desire. Clary looked at Jace, appalled. You want to give me to them? I want them to help you. Jace leaned across the table so close she could see the darker amber flecks in his light eyes. Maybe we don't get to look for the cup, he said softly. Maybe the Clave will do that. But what's in your mind belongs to you. Someone's hidden secrets there, secrets you can't see. Don't you want to know the truth about your own life? I don't want someone else inside my head, she said weakly. She knew he was right, but the idea of turning herself over to beings that even the shadow hunters thought were creepy sent a chill through her blood.
I'll go with you, said Jace. I'll stay with you while they do it.
That's enough. Simon had stood up from the table, red with anger. Leave her alone. Alec glanced over at Simon as if he'd just noticed him, raking tumbled black hair out of his eyes and blinking.
What are you still doing here, mundane?
Simon ignored him. I said, leave her alone. Jace glanced over at him, a slow, sweetly poisonous glance.
Alec is right, he said. The Institute is sworn to shelter shadow hunters, not their mundane friends, especially when they've worn out their welcome.
Isabel got up and took Simon's arm. I'll show him out. For a moment, it looked like he might resist her, but he caught Clary's eye across the table as she shook her head slightly. He subsided. Head up, he let Isabel lead him from the room. Clary stood up.
I'm tired, she said. I want to go to sleep.
You've hardly eaten anything, Jace protested. She brushed aside his reaching hand.
I'm not hungry.
It was cooler in the hallway than it had been in the kitchen. Clary leaned against the wall, pulling at her shirt, which was sticking to the cold sweat on her chest. Far down the hall, she could see Isabel's and Simon's retreating figures swallowed up by shadows. She watched them go silently, a shivery, odd feeling growing in the pit of her stomach. When had Simon become Isabel's responsibility instead of hers? If there was one thing she was learning from all this, it was how easy it was to lose everything you had always thought you'd have forever. The room was all gold and white with high walls that gleamed like enamel and a roof high above clear and glittering like diamonds. Clary wore a green velvet dress and carried a gold fan in her hand. Her hair, twisted into a knot that spilled curls, made her head feel strangely heavy every time she turned to look behind her.
"You see someone more interesting than me?" asked Simon.
In the dream, he was mysteriously an expert dancer. He steered her through the crowd as if she were a leaf caught in a river current. He was wearing all black like a shadow hunter, and it showed his coloring to good advantage. Dark hair, lightly browned skin, white teeth. He's handsome, Clary thought with a jolt of surprise.
There's no one more interesting than you, Clary said. It's just this place. I've never seen anything like it.
She turned again as they passed a champagne fountain. An enormous silver dish, the centerpiece a mermaid with a jar pouring sparkling wine down her bare back. People were filling their glasses from the dish, laughing and talking. The mermaid turned her head as Clary passed and smiled. The smile showed white teeth as sharp as a vampire's.
"Welcome to the Glass City," said a voice that wasn't Simon's.
Clary found that Simon had disappeared, and she was now dancing with Jace, who was wearing white, the material of his shirt a thin cotton. She could see the black marks through it. There was a bronze chain around his throat, and his hair and eyes looked more gold than ever. She thought about how she would like to paint his portrait with the dull gold paint one sometimes saw in Russian icons. "Where's Simon?" she asked as they spun again around the champagne fountain. Clary saw Isabel there, and Alec, both of them in royal blue. They were holding hands like Hansel and Gretel in the dark forest.
"This place is for the living," said Jace. His hands were cool on hers, and she was aware of them in a way she had not been of Simon's. She narrowed her eyes at him.
"What do you mean?"
He leaned close. She could feel his lips against her ear. They were not cool at all.
"Wake up, Clary," he whispered. "Wake up. Wake up."
She bolted upright in bed, gasping, hair plastered to her neck with cold sweat. Her wrists were held in a hard grip. She tried to pull away, then realized who was restraining her.
"Jace?"
"Yeah."
He was sitting on the edge of the bed. How had she gotten into bed, looking tousled and half awake with early morning hair and sleepy eyes?
"Let go of me."
"Sorry."
His fingers slipped from her wrist.
"You tried to hit me the second I said your name."
"I'm a little jumpy, I guess."
She glanced around. She was in a small bedroom furnished in dark wood.
By the quality of the faint light coming in through the half-open window, she guessed it was dawn, or just after. Her backpack was propped against one wall.
How did I get here? I don't remember.
I found you asleep on the floor in the hallway. Jace sounded amused. Hodge helped me get you into bed. Thought you'd be more comfortable in the guest room than the infirmary.
Wow. I don't remember anything.
She ran her hands through her hair, pushing draggled curls out of her eyes.
What time is it, anyway?
About 5.
In the morning?
She glared at him.
You'd better have a good reason for waking me up.
Why, were you having a good dream?
She could still hear music in her ears, feel the heavy jewels brushing her cheeks.
I don't remember.
He stood up. One of the Silent Brothers is here to see you. Hodge sent me to wake you up. Actually, he offered to wake you up himself, but since it's 5 a.m., I figured you'd be less cranky if you had something nice to look at.
Meaning you?
What else?
I didn't agree to this, you know, she snapped. This Silent Brother thing.
Do you want to find your mother, he said, or not?
She stared at him.
You just have to meet Brother Jeremiah, that's all. You might even like him. He's got a great sense of humor, for a guy who never says anything.
She put her head in her hands. Get out. Get out so I can change. She swung her legs out of bed the moment the door shut behind him. Though it was barely dawn, humid heat was already beginning to gather in the room. She pushed the window shut and went into the bathroom to wash her face and rinse her mouth, which tasted like old paper. 5 minutes later, she was sliding her feet into her green sneakers. She changed into cutoffs and a plain black t-shirt. If only her thin, freckled legs looked more like Isabel's lanky, smooth limbs. But it couldn't be helped. She pulled her hair back into a ponytail and went to join Jace in the hallway. Church was there with him, muttering and circling restlessly.
What's with the cat? Clary asked.
The Silent Brothers make him nervous.
Sounds like they make everyone nervous.
Jace smiled thinly. Church meowed as they set off down the hall, but didn't follow them. At least the thick stones of the cathedral walls still held some of the night's chill. The corridors were dark and cool. When they reached the library, Clary was surprised to see that the lamps were off. The library was lit only by the milky glow that filtered down through the high windows set into the vaulted roof. Hodge sat behind the enormous desk in a suit, his gray-streaked hair silvered by the dawn light. For a moment, she thought he was alone in the room, that Jace had been playing a joke on her. Then she saw a figure move out of the dimness, and she realized that what she had thought was a patch of darker shadow was a man. A tall man in a heavy robe that fell from neck to foot, covering him completely. The hood of the robe was raised, hiding his face. The robe itself was the color of parchment, and the intricate runic designs along the hem and sleeves looked as if they'd been inked there in drying blood. The hair rose along Clary's arms and on the back of her neck, prickling almost painfully.
"This," said Hodge, "is Brother Jeremiah of the Silent City."
The man came toward them, his heavy cloak swirling as he moved, and Clary realized what it was about him that was strange. He made no sound at all as he walked, not the slightest footstep. Even his cloak, which should have rustled, was silent. She would almost have wondered if he were a ghost. But no, she thought as he halted in front of them. There was a strange, sweet smell about him, like incense and blood, the smell of something living.
"And this, Jeremiah," Hodge said, rising from his desk, "is the girl I wrote you about, Clarissa Frey."
The hooded face turned slowly toward her. Clary felt cold to her fingertips.
"Hello," she said.
There was no reply.
"I decided you were right, Jace," said Hodge. "I was right," said Jace. "I usually am."
Hodge ignored this. "I sent a letter to the Clave about all this last night, but Clary's memories are her own. Only she can decide how she wants to deal with the contents of her own head. If she wants the help of the Silent Brothers, she should have that choice." Clary said nothing. Dorothea had said there was a block in her mind hiding something. Of course she wanted to know what it was, but the shadowy figure of the Silent Brother was so, well, silent.
Silence itself seemed to flow from him like a dark tide, black and thick as ink. It chilled her bones. Brother Jeremiah's face was still turned toward her, nothing but darkness visible under his hood.
"This is Jocelyn's daughter."
Clary gave a little gasp, stepping back. The words had echoed inside her head as if she'd thought them herself, but she hadn't.
"Yes," said Hodge, and added quickly, "but her father was a mundane."
"That does not matter," said Jeremiah. "The blood of the Clave is dominant."
"Why did you call my mother Jocelyn?" said Clary, searching in vain for some sign of a face beneath the hood. "Did you know her?"
"The brothers keep records on all members of the Clave," explained Hodge. "Exhaustive records."
"Not that exhaustive," said Jace, "if they didn't even know she was still alive."
"It is likely that she had the assistance of a warlock in her disappearance. Most shadow hunters cannot so easily escape the Clave."
There was no emotion in Jeremiah's voice. He sounded neither approving nor disapproving of Jocelyn's actions. "There's something I don't understand," Clary said. "Why would Valentine think my mom had the mortal cup? If she went through so much trouble to disappear, like you said, then why would she bring it with her?"
"To keep him from getting his hands on it," said Hodge. "She, above all people, would have known what would happen if Valentine had the cup, and I imagine she didn't trust the Clave to hold on to it. Not after Valentine got it away from them in the first place."
"I guess." Clary couldn't keep the doubt from her voice. The whole thing seemed so unlikely. She tried to picture her mother fleeing under cover of darkness with the big gold cup stashed in the pocket of her overalls, and failed.
"Jocelyn turned against her husband when she found out what he intended to do with the cup," said Hodge. "It's not unreasonable to assume she would do everything in her power to keep the cup from falling into his hands. The Clave themselves would have looked first to her if they thought she was still alive."
"It seems to me," Clary said with an edge to her voice, "that no one the Clave thinks is dead is ever actually dead. Maybe they should invest in dental records."
"My father's dead," said Jace, the same edge in his voice. "I don't need dental records to tell me that."
Clary turned on him in some exasperation. "Look, I didn't mean—"
"That is enough," interrupted Brother Jeremiah. "There is truth to be learned here, if you are patient enough to listen to it."
With a quick gesture, he raised his hands and drew the hood back from his face. Forgetting Jace, Clary fought the urge to cry out. The archivist's head was bald, smooth and white as an egg, darkly indented where his eyes had once been. They were gone now. His lips were crisscrossed with a pattern of dark lines that resembled surgical stitches. She understood now what Isabel had meant by mutilation.
"The brothers of the Silent City do not lie," said Jeremiah. "If you want the truth from me, you shall have it, but I shall ask of you the same in return."
Clary lifted her chin.
"I'm not a liar either." "The mind cannot lie."
Jeremiah moved toward her.
"It is your memories I want."
The smell of blood and ink was stifling. Clary felt a wave of panic. "Wait,
Clary."
It was Hodge, his tone gentle.
"It's entirely possible that there are memories you have buried or repressed. Memories formed when you were too young to have a conscious recollection of them, that Brother Jeremiah can reach. It could help us a great deal."
She said nothing, biting the inside of her lip. She hated the idea of someone reaching inside her head, touching memories so private and hidden that even she couldn't reach them.
"She doesn't have to do anything she doesn't want to do," Jay said suddenly. "Does she?"
Clary interrupted Hodge before he could reply. "It's all right. I'll do it." Brother Jeremiah nodded curtly and moved toward her with the soundlessness that sent chills up her spine.
"Will it hurt?" she whispered.
He didn't reply, but his narrow white hands came up to touch her face. The skin of his fingers was thin as parchment paper, inked all over with runes. She could feel the power in them jumping like static electricity to sting her skin. She closed her eyes, but not before she saw the anxious expression that crossed Hodge's face. Colors swirled up against the darkness behind her eyelids,
She felt a pressure, a drawing pull in her head and hands and feet. She clenched her hands, straining against the weight, the blackness. She felt as if she were pressed up against something hard and unyielding, being slowly crushed. She heard herself gasp and went suddenly cold all over, cold as winter. In a flash, she saw an icy street, gray buildings looming overhead, an explosion of whiteness stinging her face in freezing particles. "That's enough!" Jace's voice cut through the winter chill, and the falling snow vanished, a shower of white sparks. Clary's eyes sprang open. Slowly, the library came back into focus. The book-lined walls, the anxious faces of Hodge and Jace. Brother Jeremiah stood unmoving, a carved idol of ivory and red ink. Clary became aware of the sharp pains in her hands and glanced down to see red lines scored across her skin where her nails had dug in.
"Jace," Hodge said reprovingly.
"Look at her hands." Jace gestured toward Clary, who curled her fingers in to cover her injured palms. Hodge put a broad hand on her shoulder.
"Are you all right?"
Slowly she moved her head in a nod. The crushing weight had gone, but she could feel the sweat that drenched her hair, pasted her shirt to her back like sticky tape.
"There is a block in your mind," said Brother Jeremiah. "Your memories cannot be reached."
"A block?" asked Jace.
"You mean she's repressed her memories?"
"No. I mean they have been blocked from her conscious mind by a spell. I cannot break it here. She will have to come to the Bone City and stand before the Brotherhood."
"A spell?" said Clary incredulously. "Who would have put a spell on me?"
Nobody answered her. Jace looked at his tutor. He was surprisingly pale, Clary thought, considering that this had been his idea. "Hodge, she shouldn't have to go if she doesn't. It's all right."
Clary took a deep breath. Her palms ached where her nails had cut them, and she wanted badly to lie down somewhere dark and rest. "I'll go. I want to know the truth. I want to know what's in my head."
Jace nodded once. "Fine, then I'll go with you."
Leaving the Institute was like climbing into a wet, hot canvas bag. Humid air pressed down on the city, turning the air to grimy soup. "I don't see why we have to leave separately from Brother Jeremiah," Clary grumbled. They were standing on the corner outside the Institute. The streets were deserted except for a garbage truck trundling slowly down the block. What, is he embarrassed to be seeing the Shadow Hunters or something?
"The Brotherhood are Shadow Hunters," Jace pointed out.
Somehow, he managed to look cool despite the heat. It made Clary want to smack him. "I suppose he went to get his car?" she inquired sarcastically.
Jace grinned. "Something like that."
She shook her head. "You know, I'd feel a lot better about this if Hodge had come with us."
"What? I'm not protection enough for you?"
"It's not protection I need right now. It's someone who can help me think." Suddenly reminded, she clapped a hand over her mouth. "Oh, Simon!"
"No, I'm Jace," said Jace patiently. "Simon is the weaselly little one with the bad haircut and dismal fashion sense."
"Oh, shut up," she replied, but it was more automatic than heartfelt. "I meant to call before I went to sleep, see if you got home okay." Shaking his head, Jace regarded the heavens as if they were about to open up and reveal the secrets of the universe.
"With everything that's going on, you're worried about Weasel Face?"
"Don't call him that. He doesn't look like a weasel."
"He may be right," said Jace. "I've met an attractive weasel or two in my time. He looks more like a rat."
"He does not.
He's probably at home lying in a puddle of his own drool. Just wait till Isabel gets bored with him and you have to pick up the pieces."
"Is Isabel likely to get bored with him?" Clary asked. Jace thought about this.
"Yes," he said.
Clary wondered if perhaps Isabel was smarter than Jace gave her credit for. Maybe she would realize what an amazing guy Simon was, how funny, how smart, how cool. Maybe they'd start dating. The idea filled her with a nameless horror. Lost in thought, it took her several moments to realize that Jace had been saying something to her. When she blinked at him, she saw a wry grin spread across his face.
"What?" she asked ungraciously. I wish you'd stop desperately trying to get my attention like this, he said. It's become embarrassing.
Sarcasm is the last refuge of the imaginatively bankrupt, she told him.
I can't help it. I use my rapier wit to hide my inner pain.
Your pain will be outer soon if you don't get out of traffic. Are you trying to get run over by a cab?
Don't be ridiculous, he said. We can never get a cab that easily in this neighborhood.
As if on cue, a narrow black car with tinted windows rumbled up to the curb and paused in front of Jace, engine purring. It was long and sleek and low to the ground like a limousine, the windows curved outward. Jace looked at her sideways. There was amusement in his glance, but also a certain urgency. She glanced at the car again, letting her gaze relax, letting the strength of what was real pierce the veil of glamour. Now the car looked like Cinderella's carriage, except instead of being pink and gold and blue like an Easter egg, it was black as velvet, its windows darkly tinted. The wheels were black, the leather trimmings all black. On the black metal driver's bench sat Brother Jeremiah, holding a set of reins in his gloved hands. His face was hidden beneath the cowl of his parchment-colored robe. On the other end of the reins were two horses, black as smoke, snarling and pawing at the sky.
Get in, said Jace.
When she continued to stand there gaping, he took her arm and half pushed her in through the open door of the carriage, swinging himself up after her. The carriage began to move before he had closed the door behind them. He fell back in his seat, plush and glossily upholstered, and looked over at her.
A personal escort to the Bone City is nothing to turn your nose up at.
I wasn't turning my nose up. I was just surprised. I wasn't expecting... I thought it was a car.
Just relax, said Jace. Enjoy that new carriage smell.
Clary rolled her eyes and turned to look out the windows. She would have thought that a horse and carriage wouldn't have stood a chance in Manhattan traffic, but they were moving downtown easily, their soundless progression unnoticed by the snarl of taxis, buses, and SUVs that choked the avenue. In front of them, a yellow cab switched lanes, cutting off their forward progress. Clary tensed, worried about the horses. Then the carriage lurched upward as the horses sprang lightly to the top of the cab. She choked off a gasp. The carriage, rather than dragging along the ground, sailed up behind the horses, rolling lightly and soundlessly up over the cab's roof and down the other side. Clary glanced backward as the carriage hit the pavement again with a jolt. The cab driver was smoking and staring ahead, utterly oblivious.
I always thought cab drivers didn't pay attention to traffic, but this is ridiculous, she said weakly. Just because you can see through glamour now.
Jace let the end of the sentence hang delicately in the air between them.
I can only see through it when I concentrate, she said. It hurts my head a little.
I bet that's because of the block in your mind. The brothers will take care of that.
Then what?
Then you'll see the world as it is. Infinite. Said Jace with a dry smile. Don't quote Blake at me. The smile turned less dry.
I didn't think you'd recognize it. You don't strike me as someone who reads a lot of poetry.
Everyone knows that quote because of the Doors.
Jace looked at her blankly.
The Doors? They were a band?
If you say so, he said.
I suppose you don't have much time for enjoying music, Clary said, thinking of Simon, for whom music was his entire life.
In your line of work.
He shrugged.
Maybe the occasional wailing chorus of the damned.
Clary looked at him quickly to see if he was joking, but he was expressionless. But you were playing the piano yesterday, she began. At the Institute, so you must... The carriage lurched upward again. Clary grabbed at the edge of her seat and stared. They were rolling along the top of a downtown M1 bus. From this vantage point, she could see the upper floors of the old apartment buildings that lined the avenue, elaborately carved with gargoyles and ornamental cornices.
I was just messing around, said Jace, without looking at her. My father insisted I learn to play an instrument.
You sound strict, your father.
Jace's tone was sharp. Not at all. He indulged me. He taught me everything. Weapons training, demonology, arcane lore, ancient languages. He gave me anything I wanted. Horses, weapons, books, even a hunting falcon.
But weapons and books aren't exactly what most kids want for Christmas, Clary thought as the carriage thunked back down to the pavement. Why didn't you mention to Hodge that you knew the men that Luke was talking to?